Hello, this is Brian Reynolds, San Luis Obispo County Library Director for Issues and Ideas on KCBX Radio, public radio for the Central Coast. Joining me today are Dee Torres, Homeless Services Director from the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo, and Laurel Weir, Homeless Services Coordinator for San Luis Obispo County. Also joining me is Christine Tardif, Library Manager for the San Luis Obispo County Library. Our discussion today, as you might have guessed from the initial words, is homelessness, what it is, how it might be reduced, the different agencies and resources in the county. There are a variety of issues. There's a variety of resources. And we're going to start by discussing a little bit about the CAPSLO and the county services and how they might differ. Dee, do you want to start with CAPSLO?
Well, CAPSLO provides direct services to the homeless. So what I oversee is the Prado Day Center. It's the only day center currently in our county for homeless. Also the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter that provides the overnight services. And then there's a program that wraps around through those two programs and around the county, and that's our case management program. Along with our case management program, we have some permanent housing units located in the South County and the North County.
Sounds great. So it sounds like some of them are fixed facilities and some of it is mobile.
Uh-huh. Outreach. Yes.
Great. Laurel, how about you? What does the DSS, Department of Social Services, do?
The Department of Services provides a variety of services. It complements what CAPSLO does by providing the income supports that people need in order to become stable. CalFresh, which is also known as food stamps. CalWORKS, which is temporary assistance to needy families, and Medi-Cal enrollment, Medicaid enrollment, and what are known as public benefits.
How long has that position been in the county? You're fairly new to this position, or is it a new position?
It is. My understanding is it's a new position, and I have been here since the end of July.
So prior to that, where was the homeless services for the county overseen? Was it mainly with CAPSLO or...
There is a Homeless Services Oversight Council that is charged with the planning for homeless services, and there was an executive director of that organization. It was a private, privately held
situation.
So what is the Oversight Council you were talking about? I attended that meeting yesterday, and just some of the issues that you're talking about. Can you talk about that?
Sure. The Homeless Services Oversight Council for San Luis Obispo County is a governing body that is made up of both public and private sector entities. Representatives on the council are either involved in providing direct services in some way or are involved as members of governmental agencies that are working with the nonprofit providers to assist people who are homeless. And it is a planning body that is responsible for making recommendations about where the county and federal funding go towards homelessness.
Laurel, because this homeless problem is a countywide problem, do you think this Homeless Resources Council is representative of all the different areas of the county or all of the players?
The oversight body is intended to be representative. It has elected officials from each of the seven incorporated jurisdictions around the county. And there are still some things we could do to make it more representative. We have just recently added some new positions, including a veteran services representative, an organization representing people with victims of domestic violence, an representative from the educational arena, one from the K through 12 schools, and one from a university, or excuse me, a community college that provides services.
You know, just that list of people and agencies involved gives me the impression that homelessness is a condition, an affliction that affects people from all walks of life, not just men or women, but families, not just poor people, but perhaps veterans and others. So it really seems to cut across the social fabric.
Yes, yes.
I suppose that even a downturn in one's finances or a major illness, given the healthcare situation, could produce those effects. Dee, I notice in the description of CAPSLO's programs that there's a goal to help clients achieve stability and self-sufficiency, not just to treat the current problem, but to try to help people get back on their feet. Could you talk a little bit about that approach?
That's exactly correct. All of our programs have the goal of self-sufficiency. That is different for each individual because, as you already kind of alluded to, it's a very diverse population. And so there's no one cookie-cutter solution for everyone. And that's why case management is so essential, because when people are working with a case manager, then they have an individual case plan with individual goals that they are setting themselves and that they're working towards with their case manager. Always the ultimate goal towards self-sufficiency, but it's a whole road that they travel on the way to self-sufficiency, increasing their income, maybe addressing medical issues that they haven't addressed. I mean, it's a very complex issue.
Yes, and does it seem to be getting worse or changing over time? Compared to, say, 5 years ago or 50 years ago?
Here in our community?
Uh-huh.
Definitely. Yeah. What we're seeing is that the population that we're providing services for is becoming more and more challenging. Medical issues are worse. As the economy is more challenging, those things are passed on to our clients. So it's not necessarily – we don't see – traditionally in our services, people who maybe have worked their whole lives and now they are just in between jobs and they end up at the shelter. That's not true. But what we do see and how the economy has directly affected our clients more specifically is that a lot of the other services have lost funding and they're kind of falling through the cracks and the network and the web that's supposed to kind of help keep people in their place.
It seems to me that a lot of times a stabilizing force in hard times is government or government services, and yet we know there have been major cutbacks mm-hmm. in government employment
exactly.
and government services. Libraries are cutting back, mm-hmm. Parks are cutting back. So just at the time they might be needed, they're maybe not there.
Definitely.
So we had talked earlier, what are some of the causes of homelessness? I mean, I know that some people think they have an idea and there's a stereotype that it's a man and it tends to be maybe they have a drug or alcohol problem, and that's not necessarily true. So what would you say are some of the causes of homelessness, and what has surprised you recently too about maybe some of your clients in particular?
Here in our county, I'll just keep speaking for the county because that's where I've been working yeah. so long. I know there's studies that show different things throughout the country. Here in our county, definitely, as we already said, it's a diverse population. There's many causes of homelessness. We cannot ignore medical issues. It's huge in this population. Severe medical issues, sometimes untreated since childhood. We've found clients that mm-hmm. were thought to have mental illness, but actually had brain injury from, you know, in their teens. So, I mean, there's many, many causes. Divorce is a cause sometimes of homelessness. Domestic violence can be a cause. A lack of employment, and also a very real cause and something that we can't ignore is it's usually symptomatic of other things, but drugs and alcohol, mental illness, they are prevalent in the population. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole combination of things.
Mm-hmm. So besides the Prado Day Center, which so many people are familiar with, what are some other resources and services and treatment plans that are available for people who might not necessarily want to go to Prado Center? So in the library, we'll have some of the homeless say they don't want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we there is two-on-one, and we do have some other resources that you've given us and some other organizations have given us, and we do our best. But for them, I'd say we wouldn't really know everything that's available.
I mean, yeah.
So if they don't want to go to Prado Day Center, what would you suggest, who they call and what types of
I guess it would depend on why they don't want to go to Prado Day Center.
I think that in itself is a sort of a call to some type of
yeah.
service that, mm-hmm. that we that sometimes we're hoping someone can provide.
Sometimes there's many reasons. You know, the one segment of the population that we don't talk a lot about, but it is prevalent here, and they don't go to the Prado Day Center or use really any services, are the 290 sexual registrants. And in my experience, I've been here for a while, doing this for a long time, that's a very big reason why people will say, I don't want to go to Prado. It's because they can't go, because they have that issue, and there really is no services here in the county for them. I'm not a big proponent of that, but I mean, they're here and they're homeless, and there's no services that they're receiving.
Laurel, sorry, Dee, would those be... What the public would call a registered sex offender?
Right, right. We're not allowed to provide services.
So it's not necessarily a condition of their probation, but those people, if they were found out, would be kicked out because of the regulations.
And their probation, because we do have families and children in all of our services. So,
right.
And
so they're not allowed to receive any services?
No
services. Not just Prado Day Center?
No, not the Echo Shelter. They would still be eligible to work with DSS, maybe if they were, there was some sort of benefits that they were eligible for, and Laurel can speak to that. But as for housing or, kind of day center services, it's real. Housing is very complicated when you're working with that segment of the population. That's not the only segment that says they don't want to go to the day center, but that's something that comes up a lot for us.
Right, and one of the issues is they're not allowed to get within so many feet of organizations that serve children. So part of it is that they can't approach many, even DSS, the actual building, because DSS serves many, many families, would be off limits. They could certainly call.
I would imagine the public library would be in that category, or a school campus. I'd like to remind you that you are listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Radio, public radio for the Central Coast, with your host, Brian Reynolds. Today, we're talking about the issue of homelessness in San Luis Obispo County. We have Dee Torres, Homeless Services Director for the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo County, and Laurel Weir, Homeless Services Coordinator for the Department of Social Services within our county. How do people find out? How do clients or caregivers find out about the services that are available? Is it word of mouth or something else? Either one, Laurel or Dee.
It's both. I mean, it's word of mouth, definitely. In my experience, we are not as big as we think that we are. I've been out there.
Which we?
Our county. Our San Luis Obispo County. Even though, the grade seems to be the great divide a lot of times, but... In my experience of doing this for quite some time here, I go under the bridges and through the creeks with the rangers, and I have really yet to find somebody that doesn't know about the Prado Day Center or the Maxine Lewis Shelter. And it might be a little different in more remote, segments of the county in regards to north and things like that. But it's definitely word of mouth. From my experience, and relatives and friends, and then also the agencies. We partner with all of the different agencies countywide. So,
which agencies do you mean?
Everything. DSS is DSS now has outreach stations in different parts of the county, so the DSS workers are familiar with the at least the core services, and they do referrals. Even the bus drivers, have our flyers on the buses, and. The PD, where we coordinate services with the PD and the park rangers that go under the creeks, outreach workers through our case management program and other agencies' case management programs.
That would be police department.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Laurel, you have something to say on this issue, I guess.
I wanted to just add that we also, one of the ways in which families find out is through the school system. Each of our local school districts has someone who is responsible for ensuring that all the homeless families in the school district are identified and are approached about services that are available, and particularly they focus on making sure that the families are able to enroll the kids in school and that the kids are able to attend. If the families end up in a different part of the county, say in a shelter over at Echo, but in Atascadero, but are in school in Templeton, there's transportation provided to make sure the kids can stay in their original schools.
What would be a clue to a caregiver, say a teacher, or someone else, a social worker, that there was a homeless problem, I'm assuming they don't necessarily self-identify.
No, not always. They do, the schools actually do make an effort. They send home materials with the kids at the beginning of the year to take to their parents that explains what is available to them. And so the parents can do sometimes frequently contact the school or fill out the form and let the schools know. But other ways that the teachers might know are if kids are frequently absent. That is common among families that have very unstable living situations. So that is often a clue to the teachers that something is going on.
And then would that teacher report to their administration? Is that how it goes up the pipeline?
The teacher could report to the liaison, the McKinney Education liaison, who could then contact the family.
So how does a family find out if there's availability at Maxine Lewis?
They either work with a caseworker earlier mm-hmm. in the day over at the day center, or they would actually just come down to the Maxine Lewis shelter and register in. It's mm-hmm. it's nightly intake.
So they do allow emergency mm-hmm. Somebody showing up.
We have emergency beds that we hold mm-hmm. So that anyone approaching services for their first time being homeless has a guaranteed bed for 30 days. During that time, we outreach and work with them and do everything we can to convince them to enter into the case management program, start saving their money or securing an income. That's the self-sufficiency piece. If for some reason they don't take advantage of that program, then after 30 days, they go on a lower priority to make room for other people in an emergency situation. So they go on a lower priority, and they actually have to draw numbers to get a bed.
What do you mean by case management program?
The case management program is a little bit of what we discussed. It's partnering up with a case manager who helps you to develop your own goals to work towards self-sufficiency. Part of that program, we do require that you save some portion of your income towards housing for yourself, and that you, like I said, set goals and move forward with the goals that you've agreed upon with your caseworker.
Well, what if there's more issues involved, like we talked about earlier? What if there's mental health issues or drug or alcohol abuse? What happens then in that 30 days?
Part of your case plan could be that you would address those issues. We do take into consideration when we're working with people what their situation is in regards to mental health and even medical, situations. But consistently encouraging people to take advantage of case management. We're very limited in our beds. Mm. The Maxine Lewis shelter has 50 beds, mm. and that's it. And on top of that, we partner with a different church every month so that we could provide about another 40 beds. Mm. And that's where the families go every night. So in total, it's about 90 beds a night that we can provide. So we have to have a system for allocating those beds and making sure that we're addressing people that are in crisis and emergency, but and also at the same time people that are willing to work towards self-sufficiency.
Dee, how many people, those 90 beds, what kind, can you guess a percentage of people who would want a bed versus what's available?
Oh, you mean if we had more beds?
Is there a shortfall?
There's a shortfall. We definitely are turning away people nightly, anywhere from 1 to 12 people a night. But we are not turning anybody away that is in the emergency situation or that is willing to work towards self-sufficiency.
We know that families, unfortunately, are an increasing part of the homeless issue. I don't know how many are two-parent families, but in the shelter, are there restrictions on how a family can be together or spend the night together versus just people off the street?
It's virtually the same in our shelter. Like I was saying, we actually transport the families every night over to a church, and they're sleeping on cots.
I see.
in a kind of a communal setting. Families segregated, but not by much, just by some space. So it's definitely not an ideal situation for us, but that's how we're able to accommodate and maximize the number of beds.
So they can stay together. You make arrangements for mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
That's good.
What is ECHO?
It's the overnight shelter in Atascadero. Mm-hmm. They provide about 30 beds right now. Mm-hmm. And they serve mainly families, but individuals as well.
So anyone in the North County, it's the same thing if they sign
very
up.
Very similar. They're just the only difference is they don't have the daytime services, mm-hmm. but they do provide the evening services and a meal, and it's very similar to what we're doing. They also offer case management, mm-hmm. and I think they're kind of moving towards a position where they're requiring it for stay as well.
And who runs that facility? That's not a county facility.
No, all of these services are run by nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So they are a nonprofit, the El Camino Homeless Organization, ECHO for short.
And there's a South County Resource Center.
There's a Five Cities Homeless Coalition that mm-hmm. is in process of trying to get a day center going in the South County. They have some funding. They have some land that they're looking at. But there's no the only actual homeless services, unless we try to get into nitty-gritty stuff, but real services is the People's Kitchen. They do a lunch in the South County every day, mm-hmm. 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about an issue that's in the news lately, if you're willing, and that would be the controversy over siting of homeless service centers. There is, here in San Luis Obispo, a discussion about having additional resources near the Department of Social Services. What are some of the issues, the pros and cons of that, and are they, in your opinions, real or exaggerated? How about you, Laurel?
Well, I think one of the major pros is what you just mentioned, is that it would be sited right next to the Department of Social Services. So it would be a very nice combination of services that were available to people. That's what you generally want if you're going to be serving homeless people, is to have all of the services co-located.
A cluster, sort of.
Exactly, so that people are not going all over town and spending most of their day just on the bus rather than getting help.
And there's opposition, though, to some of the current preferred site. Is that right? By local business owners, say, or? I mean, it's in the newspaper.
Yeah, there have been some concerns raised by some of the businesses. It's certainly not all, but there have been some concerns. That's not uncommon when someone is proposing a facility to serve homeless people. It's normal. It's what you have to work through, which is what Capsula is doing in meeting with the business owners.
Since this area of town, I don't know how many of people know this, but it's not a very residential part of town. What would be the concern, or is there a typical concern that the business people have? I mean, it's not like a homeless person is going to camp out in someone's yard because these are commercial operations.
Right, right. I think, though, that people are concerned that people are going to be coming through their business. I think they do have are going on some past experiences with people that they perceive to have been homeless. These are not necessarily people that would be utilizing the services at the service center. The other thing is that right now we have a day center, and so there's some foot traffic because people have to come down to the day center when it opens up and they have to walk through the neighborhood when it closes. But with the new homeless services center, people would actually be able to stay there. And so it would likely reduce the foot traffic through the neighborhood.
So I'm guessing that the presence of homeless people near a business might maybe drive away customers, or I'm not sure beyond that, or maybe incidental crime. I mean, I'm just guessing, speculating here, but are there alternative sites? I think I've also read that in the newspaper being discussed in the general area.
Well, my understanding, and I'm newer to this because I've only been here for a few months, but it's my understanding that there was a large search for sites in the beginning, and for a number of reasons, this particular site was chosen because of its location and the ability to utilize it without having to purchase it.
Regarding this new service, what would it be, and who gets to decide if it goes in or not? What would it exactly offer?
Well, right now, we actually, you know, Capslo does have a lease on the land. Mm-hmm. We've already gone through the entitlements. We have entitled land. So what we'll decide, I think, that's in flux right now. What's driving the decision is that there is some real opposition in the immediate neighborhood, and that, to be very honest, there's no secret, has affected fundraising. So it's honestly the money is a big driver currently.
So you need fundraising as a component to make this happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Is that fundraising for capital, like to build a building?
Mm-hmm. To build the building, definitely. And then we're going to need the support of the community in order to sustain the services. So that is why we are working so hard to try to partner up with the business owners and alleviate their concerns and work through these issues. Because, frankly, we're going to need them on our side if this is going to work. We just do. Mm-hmm. Prado and the shelter currently, and the same with Echo in the North County, rely on the public to keep us going. We do get some private funds. It varies per program, but it hovers around maybe 50% of our overall funding. So the other 50% plus or minus, depending on, you know, what's going through the government that year, comes straight from the community. So we're only providing these services at the will of the community, honestly.
It's an interesting fact about public libraries that a lot of people may not know is that we serve literally hundreds of homeless clients every day, and I would guess 95, 99% of them are very well behaved. Maybe we could put a public library into the mix, and that might make it a little bit better.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I've attended the Downtown Association's their annual meeting where the police chief had talked recently, and I learned that the police have classified the homeless into three categories, and the category of the will nots, and I think that who choose homelessness as an issue as a lifestyle, excuse me, and in some of them engage in panhandling. So and I think the negativity that we hear sometimes in the library system is you know, there's somebody hanging out here, or there's somebody asking me for money, or that type of thing. So I think the stereotype and the that comes at all these homeless people are these men who are hanging out asking you for money. Again, I think that feeds into the stereotype, because when you're shopping downtown, that's the exposure that most people have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those people who I would not say that obviously all of them are will nots. I have no idea if that's true. But we certainly in the library system are aware of quite a few who have that a chosen lifestyle, and we've gotten to know them, and like Brian said, the majority of them are just fine. But again, I think that is the exposure that most people have is, you know, usually just the encounters they have downtown shopping and the negativity they feel towards that. So I have a feeling that the businesses who are some of the businesses that are opposing this new site may feel the same way as some businesses do downtown.
It's absolutely unfortunate that the stereotype kind of, you know, can paint the entire population. Mm-hmm. And we are constantly working to educate people and, you know, let them see what the real population is. And that's a challenge. But to be fair to the business owners, there have been some very real issues in their area, and we're working hard to bust through those. In fact, we cleared an encampment just the other day for one of the business owners.
I'd like to remind you that you're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast with your host Brian Reynolds, joined by Library Manager Christine Tardif. Today we're discussing the topic of homelessness with Dee Torres, Homeless Services Director for the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo County, and Laurel Weir, Homeless Services Coordinator, San Luis Obispo County. Just picking up on a comment that was made a second ago, I cannot imagine that anybody would choose poverty or choose homelessness. You hear that in the rhetoric, some of the pundits, but I think it seems to me intuitively it might be 0.1%, maybe the mavericks, the people who don't like rules or convention, but why would one choose to be not have a roof over their head or to be poor? What would you say to people, Dee and Laurel, if they said to you, homelessness is a choice?
I would say that that is almost never the case. There's usually some underlying issue. Frequently, there is people who claim that they choose homelessness have, if you talk to them further, it becomes clear that there are other issues. I recently talked to someone who initially said he chose to live in his car. After talking with him a while, it became clear that he had been in a housing unit. It was getting to the point where he could not afford to eat if he remained in his housing unit. So he chose to move out into his car in order to eat. That's not really a choice to be homeless. It's a choice to live. And then for other people, substance abuse and or co-occurring mental illness often means that they have difficulty living in shelters or other places, and they can't comply with rules, and so there is not an option for them that is workable.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how that language started. Again, I'm not pointing any fingers at any police officer. I have the highest regard for them, but that term that the will nots is again, it seems a bit stereotypical again. When I heard that, I thought, I agree with you that it seems like it probably didn't start out as a choice. It just it was like the lesser of whatever was a bigger issue. Maybe they couldn't survive in some of the treatment plant facilities or needed to eat or that type of thing. But I would tend to agree with you that the root of the homelessness of the people who claim they're choosing it as a lifestyle, it probably was not initially a choice.
I'm going to hazard a guess about it. Mm. I think the average person realizes in their heart of hearts that they're probably a few paychecks away or a surgical procedure away from being on the streets themselves. And that's kind of a scary idea where something random might happen to you or your loved ones and you'd be literally in the same situation. And probably it's more comforting to say, well, it's a choice. That'll never happen to me because I'll never choose it. Mm-hmm. It might be a comfort in that way.
Well, fear, too. I mean, we tend to not want to expose ourselves to things we fear. And so if we do fear that, gosh, I'm a paycheck or two away from that person right there, there's that fear that you just don't want to be around people who maybe remind you that you're in a precarious situation yourself, possibly. So.
The great Kurt Vonnegut in the book mm-hmm. Slaughterhouse-Five mentions that of all the world literatures, American literature does not give any examples of poor people making good. Mm. And I must admit, I think that's part of the ethic where the Almighty smiles on people who have lots of money, and those that don't, well, they probably did something wrong. And I think it's a very significant thing. I think debtors' prisons only exist in the English-speaking countries pretty much. So maybe it's a deeper and more historic thing than that.
Well, actually, speaking of that, Laurel, can you tell us share with us a success story or two that, I mean, you must have quite a few of them of people you've helped and have just completely changed.
Yeah, we have countless success stories. Wow. The case management program that we operate housed around 200 people last year, and these are generally the people that everybody else has given up on, the unhousable. So there's countless success stories. We've actually housed some very kind of highlighted stories of some people who have been homeless, chronically homeless here in our community for many, many years. And we've had some really great successes with some funding that we received, some HPRP funding that allowed us to pay their rent for up to 18 months, mm-hmm. which is what we're finding with the real chronically homeless, that's imperative to have some sort of a real strong funding source mm-hmm. so that you can house them, wrap services around them, and then keep them housed. And so we helped pull somebody out from under the bridge that had been there for 10 years, walked into his tent, and never walked out. He actually, his legs atrophied from not using them. Mm-hmm. And we were able to partner with other agencies and house him. And he's been housed now for 2-3 years successfully. Everybody else had kind of given up on him. But
what is a wraparound service? You mentioned that a couple times.
Well, Laurel alluded to it. Could be anything from DSS, CalFresh food stamps, to Social Security income. And then there's other like in-home support services if they have medical issues. If it's a family, there could be child care that we do through our CCRC child care, through CAPSLO. Goodwill, we get clothing vouchers from the Goodwill to help, get people some clothing to find a job or something like that. It's basically anything we could get our hands on. There's several churches here in the area that help financially and give individuals a little bit of money to get a car fixed or, certain things to help us to pull them out of the homeless situation that they're in.
I know that I've become acquainted recently with our new Veteran Services Officer, Dana Cummings. And he's a wonderful guy. And we're in the library system trying to figure out ways we can help in any way we can. For example, we're going to have a table at the upcoming stand down. But I've learned through Dana that quite a few veterans wind up in the homeless situation. And, of course, with the wars in the Middle East going on year after year, there's a lot more veterans, which means there's a lot more homeless. Is that a specific type of client that has certain needs compared to others?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a segment of the population.
And growing, I guess.
Yeah, the county or throughout the country.
Throughout the, nationally, the statistics suggest that it is indeed a growing population and that they are seeing more veterans in the population who come from more recent wars. But we are also seeing some Vietnam veterans as well who had managed to come home and do okay. And then after they retired, the PTSD was kicking in.
Post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Correct.
I have a good friend who is a Vietnam vet. And, of course, that's 40 years in the past. And only in the last year or two was he finally get a diagnosis so that he could receive benefits. And that's a long time to be asking for help. There's an enumeration project coming up next week. Could you tell us a little bit about that? What are the goals and how it's going to be done?
Sure. I'll start out and Dee can jump in. The enumeration is something that we do every 2 years. It is required by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, which provides a lot of funding to our homeless shelters here in the county. And so HUD wants to know, HUD is the Housing and Urban Development Department, HUD wants to know how we're doing. Are we making progress? And so one of the ways that they measure that is to have us actually go out and count. And they want to know, what does the population look like? So we will be collecting information about not only how many people, but demographics, and doing a survey also to find out some additional information about who are the people that are out there.
How are you doing that? I mean, you have volunteers,
yeah,
or what's going on?
We get volunteers. We have routes. We do a lot of strategizing and planning in advance, mm-hmm. and then we also engage homeless individuals themselves to participate as guides because traditionally they know where homeless people are, so they help us. But it's a whole collaborative effort.
Mm-hmm. Make sure you put some of those libraries, the more urban libraries especially, on your list because, as I say, we do house a lot of them, and I don't think that many people know it. I want to talk just a little bit more about stereotypes that people have. A lot of times homeless people will maybe appear combative, and I've been told that that's because they're literally in danger sometimes because of where their living conditions are. They tend to bring all their goods with them because they've got no place to leave them behind. I was in San Francisco once, and I saw homeless people sleeping on the corners in their sleeping bags during the broad daylight, and I asked, well, why are they doing that? And that's because in the daylight, it's safer to sleep. Mm-hmm. Do you have any comments, either one of you, about some of those stereotypes and maybe things homeless people do or are perceived as acting because it's a protective thing?
Well, I think sleeping out in the daytime is one of those things that people do. Also, one issue that arises that a lot of people say, well, why don't people just go get a job and why don't they get this, that, and the other? And one of the barriers for homeless people is they're often missing their IDs, the identification that they need for services, for jobs, et cetera. And it happens because when you're living out in public spaces, you're more likely to have your possessions stolen or lost. Sometimes the police confiscate it. And so for a variety of reasons, you're often without your ID documents.
Wow, so they're at a disadvantage. I wouldn't imagine they'd have a car or a TV to watch the nightly news and so forth.
No. Yeah.
For me, it's a complex issue. And if I'm just looking at here in our county, I don't see those things as much as barriers as I see mental illness. And that's for me is the number one thing that my staff are battling on a regular basis is mental illness. And then you can, the dual diagnose goes with that, the drugs and alcohol, what's the chicken or the egg, it kind of all comes together. Mm-hmm. And because some of the ID is definitely a barrier, but that's what we break. You know, if somebody's willing to get their ID, we have a source of funds, and we work through them, you know, with them to get the ID. The problem for us is when people refuse to work with us or refuse to engage in services because of their mental illness or their trauma. I mean, there's underlying issues. So I think I've heard that, you know, I know the will nots and the can nots, and it is a very simplistic way to kind of, you know, generalize the population. But for me, the underlying issues are very severe, very complex, and very expensive to address, and so they go ignored.
On Saturday at the library's community room, you had a homeless forum, mm-hmm. and I listened in some of the homeless and some other issues. What would you say? Were you both in there? I saw you. Mm-hmm. what came out of that? What do you think might come out of that forum?
Well, some of it, of course, depends on the city council, and I think we're going to know more in the next 2 weeks how. But they have said that they are going to put homelessness as one of their top five. I believe they said top five priorities this year. Mm-hmm. But I think what we heard from the meeting was that there is a real need for additional services, particularly mm-hmm. Detox services, and so. Mm-hmm. All of us as a community trying to figure out how we can try to address that very serious problem.
Mm-hmm. And there's no clinics. I mean, the city doesn't operate clinics or hospitals, so it would have to be other agencies that would do that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I guess for me, what I'm hoping comes out of the forum is that people understand that we definitely need to increase services. And at the same time, we need to realize that the services we currently have are excellent and they need to be supported, and that they're not supported currently at the levels that they should be. So if we could support the current services and then build upon that, we would be doing something great here in our county.
I have a theory about the gun tragedies lately, that you hear a lot more discussion about gun control than you do mental health services. And my own bias is that that's because, as strong as the NRA is, there's other forces much stronger that might not want to participate in the health care and mental health care discussion, which I'm sure has to go hand in hand with anything else we're going to do. We're almost out of time. So what last thing do we want to talk about?
I just wanted to mention there are 15 libraries in the county, and we offer quite a few resources and materials for anybody who walks through our doors. We have free internet and Wi-Fi, and we have homeless visitors. We welcome them. Quite a few of them will spend the day there reading the free newspapers and magazines, and or watching movies if they have a device, if they have a player or a laptop. And we also, several of our libraries offer free computer workshops. I know we have another one coming up here soon where we have an introduction to computers, introduction to Word. And I'm going to be working with CareerStop, One Stop here soon, and hopefully offer some resume writing and searching for jobs on the internet. All of these courses, again, are free through several of the libraries in the system. We also have programs, family programs that are free, story times, Spanish story times, magicians, you know, musicians, anything. So our services at the county library system and in Santa Barbara and Monterey, of course, are always free. So we don't require identification or anything like that to come in and use any of our resources.
I'm guessing, except for the day centers, the public library is one of the few places around where you can go in out of the weather for free, unmolested. I would also say people can bring their gear and stow it as long as it is not in the blocking a walking way, walking path, as long as it's safe. I'd like to remind our listeners that this has been County Library Director for San Luis Obispo County, Brian Reynolds, on Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today, our discussion topic has been homelessness. And joining me, besides Library Manager Christine Tardif, were Dee Torres, who's the Homeless Services Director, Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo County, and Laurel Weir, Homeless Services Coordinator for the Department of Social Services, San Luis Obispo County. We thank you.